Hello, welcome to Know So the High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you today?
I'm good, Sal. How about you?
Awesome. Just a wonderful day.
Who you got for us?
Well, we have a couple of new guests with us today.
Oh, first timers.
Purdue Extension Educators are joining us in the podcast room. We've got Danielle Walker. Thanks for joining us. And Taylor Chastain. Thanks for going. I think Taylor acts like she's a little nervous, and I have never seen her be nervous about anything.
Did you tell her about the initiation process for your
first time?
I didn't
get that. I didn't get there yet.
Okay.
Well, we're going to, first, before we do that, though, we got to start with the question of the day. And we always have a silly one. This is kind of a serious one. And Danielle, we'll start with you and go around the table. What's an underrated skill that young people should learn?
Well, we actually talked about this a little bit in our office on a regular basis because we have a lot of 4-H members coming in, and we have some of the best kids in the world coming into our office. But one thing that is really important to me, and I hope that they're learning this a little bit through our office and 4-H, is how to write a thank you note.
Nice.
I think that's very important, and not just writing thanks with their name, you know, making it meaningful because, you know, people put a lot of effort into things for young people, and they need to be recognized for that. And children need to understand that things are possible because of other people. So that's mine.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And to go along with that too, how to address an envelope is another, like it seems so simple and like so silly, but just how to know where to put, where your address goes, and then how to address a business, just to go along with the thank you note. But also one of mine is just like problem solving, trying to, you know, figure it out on your own first before having to go through, you know, all this big, long process. I just think that problem solving is a really good skill that young people should have.
Try to think it through yourself before you hit Google maybe or.
Yeah, just don't rely on technology, you know, to solve all your problems or, you know, the parents or adults around you. Like, you're going to be on your own one day. You need to learn how to solve your own problems too.
Those are both.
Not that we don't want to help you solve your problems, but hopefully we're teaching you how to be able to solve your problems.
Those are awesome.
I know we should have went first. Jeff, well, what do you got?
I'm going to use 4-H. I was a 4-H leader for 25 years. And one of the things that we did every meeting is everybody had to stand up and introduce yourself. Mm. And just trying to get kids to learn how to talk,
right,
you know, to other people, talk in public. And, you know, even with the many 4-H'ers, you know, they were kindergarten age when they're starting, and you know, they would stand up and it was just introduce yourself and tell us what projects you're taking. And you know, it was fun to watch those kids in all the years I was there. You know, they'd start as a kindergartner, you know, they could barely stand up and they had their head down, and you know, they'd barely say their name and barely say one project. But then you'd see them by the time they're a senior in high school, you're like, okay, sit down, be quiet. And so I think just being able to talk, you know, talk to adults as a kid growing up. Then also, then I kind of flash forward and I go up to Purdue and I go to the career fair and I've done some resume critiques and, you know, people that are coming in, going into the job market, and the ability to get up and give a firm handshake, introduce yourself and look somebody in the eye. It's just, I think those are essential skills. You need to know how to talk and you know how to shake hands and look somebody in the eye. Mm-hmm. If you can do those things, you'll do fine in life.
It's a heck of a start. Yeah. Good. Those are all three good. Ah,
pressure's on, Sal.
Yeah, pressure's on. I thought about it a little bit, and I was thinking that I know I was involved in a mentor program with some Kids Hope program there for a while over at the local school, and a church partnership between the two. But the idea of investing delayed gratification, that if you could – would you rather have 50 cents today or a dollar on Friday or $10 next month? And that waiting, investing time and work and stuff and have for a bigger payout later. So that was one of the things that I had. Not as good, I know.
Yeah.
No. Oh, I thought that was good, Sal.
Good. All right. Well, let's have introductions then. Sure. Danielle, can you want to start for us and tell us your responsibilities and...
Sure. All right. So I'm the Ag and Natural Resources Educator for Purdue Extension in Washington County, and I've been able to do that job for 13 years now. And I would say that I'm one of the most blessed educators in Indiana because I get to do it in my home county. And that has always been a little bit of a goal of mine. When I was in high school, somebody an adult that I was very close to. She told me that when I was in high school, we were sitting on the bleachers at the fair, and I said, I want to do this someday. Oh. And so when I got the job, she's like, look at you, you're doing it, you know? And so I've been able to do this job because of a lot of people who support me and the opportunities that you know, working for the university has. So part of my job is to do educational programs, provide education, make connections for people who have questions or needs, assess needs in the county, and find a way to meet those needs.
Neat.
Related to agriculture.
Pretty much focused on agriculture, but just whatever they might need, and if there's something, whether it's licensing or anything else, to be right in that.
Right. What's an example of the natural resources part?
So I don't want to get too deep into it, but the natural resources part, Washington County, we have a conservation partnership. So there's a conservation partnership for the state, but also Washington County, we have one. So Extension, Natural Resource Conservation Service, Farm Service Agency, the Conservation Cropping Initiative, you know, we all work together in the county to provide natural resource education. So that would be something like our soil health workshop that's coming up in February. We do forestry field days, you know, make those connections with landowners so that they can implement conservation on their properties. Right. And so I know I was thinking on the way here that Sydney Calhoun, who works with Premier, is part of our conservation partnership. So we're really... I think we have a good thing going here in Washington County with that. Not all counties look at it from that same perspective.
Is that unique with the natural resources educator being?
The goal would be, I would think, in all counties for everyone to work together like that, because, you know, we all work with similar people and we all have the same goal, is to, you know, make farmers, you know, even better than they already are. So, We have a really good thing going, and it's because we have great people that work with all of those organizations.
Very good. And Taylor, I think you're at the right spot for you also, because I think this is something that you always wanted to do, is what you're doing now, correct?
Yeah.
So tell us about it.
So as I said earlier, I'm Taylor Chasteen. I am the 4-H and Youth Development Educator in Washington County. I have been there since June of 2022. 2023. So I'll be going on 3 years this summer. I was an ag teacher for a little bit before I came to Purdue, because this was always my first choice. So whenever I was in high school and I was in 4-H, like, I was going to be the 4-H educator in Washington County someday. I didn't realize that it would come a lot sooner rather than later. And I'm very excited. It's just... I loved being in 4-H whenever I was growing up, and I loved doing all of the things. And I just knew that I wanted to be the 4-H educator in Washington County. And I think it's really cool that I am the 4-H educator in Washington County now. So I work with all youth enrolled in grades K through 12. 4-H is obviously a very big part of the program. So I, you know, oversee the clubs. I get to do the county fair. I actually do work more than just 1 week a year. Yeah, so 4-H is 52 weeks a year, not just 1 week a year. That's our little joke. But I do also some in-school programming. So I work with after-school programming. I did get, the last 2 years, I've had a grant graciously from Premier Ag to do some Ag in the Classroom stuff. So I work with mostly the elementary schools in the county to do some Ag in the Classroom stuff, and I believe that's the plan for next year, too.
Good.
So that's been really fun, because I get to kind of get my ag teacher background back, and still, because I'm think that ag education is very important, so I like to do it in the elementary to kind of get them started early, too. But yeah, that's...
Is it unusual to have, obviously, to be in your home county, is it unusual to have, like, at least two people in your positions?
I would think so. Yeah.
It seems like, yeah.
Yeah. We don't know many others like that, but we're glad for it.
So tell us a little bit about Purdue Extension Service, with a little history And I think Indiana is kind of unique in how that's how we go to the growers and to the focus on ag through Purdue Extension and education. So tell us a little bit about the kind of the overarching.
Okay. I guess I'll start. Yeah. Okay. The Purdue University was started as the Lane Grant University in Indiana. And the idea of extension is to bring the university to the people. And of course, when extension started, it looks much different than it does now. I feel this is the first time I've ever been on a podcast. So I wondered about the first extension educator, what they would think about being on a podcast, you know. But it's about bringing the knowledge, the research, all of the things that's happening at the university to individual communities. So we are lucky in Indiana that we have extension offices in each county. And you know, there's educators in each county and the numbers different based upon, you know, the population that's being served. But, you know, that's one thing that I really like about what we do with extension, or at least with Ag and Natural Resources, is that, you know, we identify things that are needed in the county, and then we can go to Purdue to get information for people, bring specialists from campus to give programs, things like that. But also because Purdue's a land-grant university, every state that has land-grant universities, we're like a big connection. So if there's a question about, and I like to use this example about livestock guardian dogs, that's something that's really popular because we have so many small farms. And a lot of times those small farms are raising sheep and goats, and so they need livestock guardians. Well, Texas A&M has a livestock guardian dog specialist. I call him all the time. He's done programs for us over Zoom, you know, so it doesn't matter. Temple Grandin, you know, she works for Colorado State, the land-grant university there. And so she Zooms in, call her. We can just have those connections. And I get a little goosebumps thinking about all that we have the ability to do. And so just because it's not being done at Purdue doesn't mean we don't have a place to find that information.
You don't have to reinvent everything.
And so, of course, I know the most about agriculture and natural resources, and Taylor, obviously, youth. But then we also do, I want to mention, we have another educator in our office. Her name's Sonia Mitchell, and she does the health and human sciences part. And she has a background in mental health, which is great because then she can also connect with us. Hopefully we can start working on some mental health things for farm families and, you know, youth. And so I feel like we have a really good mix here in Washington County because we can work together, but also do specific things for our program areas.
That's a big need for that with the, you know, finances being sometimes up and down for growers and affects their livelihood and their quality of life.
Yep. So, and transitions between farm succession.
Sure.
That can be a very stressful time for farm families. So
good to know that's available.
I guess I got two things that I'd like for you guys to highlight today. And one of them is, you know, when I was growing up going through 4-H, you know, I did livestock projects. That was it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I as far as I'm concerned, that's all that 4-H was, you know, showing livestock. And then as a leader, I kept seeing how the projects evolved. And so could you speak to some of the, I mean, there's a lot of projects out there. It's not just for farm kids. There's all these. And then the second part I want to get to is how are you guys working to get people interested in agriculture? You know, it used to be easy in the old days. Everybody was at least, you know, if you weren't connected to the farm, you're just one generation away. Grandma and grandpa or something had a farm. And now we're two and three generations away from the farm. So how do we make that connection to keep people interested in? And because if we can get them into 4-H and get them to learn about agriculture, then we can keep them in the industry and they don't have to grow up on a farm.
Right. Yeah. So I would think one of the things that I have been doing is just trying to get in the classroom more and do some fun hands-on things, and then also remind them, hey, if you like all the things that I do in class with you, you know, you can come to my 4-H events. And our 4-H council this year worked really hard to secure money and funds to make 4-H free for all kids in Washington County that are enrolled in grades K through 12.
You buying show steers for them too?
No, we're not. Yeah. We're not buying show steers for them, but just to, give them the opportunity to even enroll in 4-H. So we've had several new kids that have been enrolled in 4-H in our program in the county. And we host one of the things that we do specifically with livestock is we have a mini 4-H livestock show. So they can show rabbits, swine, sheep, and goats. So it kind of gets them invested and interested in the livestock earlier. So we have a workshop that they can go to and kind of get some practice and some hands-on before that. And then they get to participate and show in the fair. But like you said, there's so many other projects other than livestock. And one of the things that we do to kind of kick off the year to let kids know about all the fun projects that we do is our Carnival of Fun. So it's a free event that they come to, and we have stations set up with different activities, and we actually don't have any livestock projects there. So they don't even know about livestock at the Carnival of Fun. So they get to do weather and climate science. This year they made a volcano at that station, and then they learn about floriculture and cake decorating and crafts, and they get to either take home something that they made there, or they get to play a game. We even have cake decorating there, so they get to decorate cookies and things like that. So I just try to remind everybody that you don't have to live on a farm or know anything about agriculture or livestock to be in 4-H, because really the opportunities that don't involve livestock are much greater than the ones that do involve livestock.
Do you feel like it's more the parents? I mean, kids get excited. You know, we used to have, I think every kid we ever had come through the 4-H program, it's like, I'm going to take collections as my project. And it was amazing all the collections that they would have and exhibit at the fair. But, you know, a lot of times I'd have kids that wanted to be in 4-H, and their parents like, I don't know if we have time for that. You know, it's all the sports and everything taken away from it. So how do you work with the parents to try to encourage them to get their kid involved in 4-H?
That is a hard one. It's not just 4-H that's dealing with, it's competition from everything around us right now. And I think just the most important thing is to kind of just keep repeating, there's something for 4-H and you can start working on your sewing project, on Christmas break. You can start, after the fair, you can go ahead and start, looking for Legos for your construction project. It doesn't have to be a huge time commitment. You can start working on it as soon as, the week after the fair if you want to.
Or you could be like my kids and wait till the week before and you're trying to cram everything in.
Yeah. I know, foods, you can't really make food. If you take food preservation, now you could, start early. But yeah, cake decorating and, foods, those are the hard ones that you can't really do right away. But I actually, in my junior leaders, we started making projects last year during the meetings. So they put together health kits and completed a health project, and they put together child development. They did a babysitter in a bag. So I kind of helped them get their projects done, so they had something to take to the fair. And I helped them in my office, because I want my building to be full of projects, and I want the kids to also get them done. So just kind of providing opportunities where it's easier to get the projects done and get them completed has helped.
Remove the stress from the day before you get projects in, because that's always a stressful time. And right. It was at our house.
Yeah. Well, back to, and Jeff's always been livestock, and his kids has too. But Danielle, what about the, are we seeing any number decline as far as livestock, or is it shifting as the kids are showing livestock, or even in production in the counties? What's changed over the last 13 years that you've been there?
Yeah, 13. So I don't know as much about the numbers of livestock and 4-H, but overall for the county, I would think that livestock numbers are maintaining or increasing. Washington County is the number one beef cow county in the state. And so that's something that we're very proud of. And we kind of go back and forth with Lawrence and Washington. It's almost like a little rivalry, maybe. Washington County is very proud of that. And a lot of our cattle producers are part of the Cattlemen's Association. And, you know, they are really great at mentoring and bringing new people in. We also have a sheep and goat sheep association and a goat association, as well as a pork producers group. So I think that has been very helpful in our county that we have all of those. Like I said, it encourages mentorship. I have the opportunity to work with those groups. And so we can do educational things together, and we just increase the number of people that are involved. I would say, though, really growing pretty quick is our sheep and goat. I think we have a lot of new people that are coming into agriculture, a lot of people interested in, you know, things like growing their own food and knowing where their food comes from and things like that. And so sheep and goats are a great way for people to get into livestock, a little bit less
capital expensive.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for saying that. You know, that you don't have to have quite the facilities that you do for beef cattle and things like that. And so sheep and goats are really growing in Washington County. We're like third or fourth in sheep and goats. And so that's good, because that's something that I'm really interested in too. I do love beef cattle, but I'm also into the sheep thing. So with that, I think Washington County is really in a great place.
Good.
Agriculturally with livestock.
Nice. So what do you think going into looking ahead, what do you think as far as for the Extension Service and where do, this may not be on a mission statement anywhere, but where do you see the Extension Service plugging in like locally and being the most effective? I think it's pretty neat that we've got natural resources and then, you know, element and education. Where do you think from here out? I mean, this, like the first podcast we've done has changed a lot coming to here. So what do you think the fit will be for the Extension Service going forward?
I guess I can later, yeah. But make sure she gets to answer too. One of the things I think is an issue, at least for me personally, as an extension educator, is that I have to know a little bit about everything.
Oh,
so,
my, yeah.
You know, if somebody comes in with a beef cattle question, I need to address that. And I need to be able to identify a tree or tell somebody why their tree is dying. That's my most popular question that I get. You know, identify this bug that's in my house, you know, all of those things. And so, I think the future we're going to have to be a little bit more specialized, and which is hard because I like working with the person that I'm identifying their tree and or telling why it's dead and identifying the bug in the house, and also working with our livestock producers or all farmers in the county. And so I think being more of a generalist sometimes hurts me with extension, because it might take me a little longer to find the answer than maybe, you know, on that tree, because that's not my specialty. But if you came to Jackson County, Richard Beckert's the ag and natural resources educator. He can answer all the tree questions, right? So it just, what his...
So you got him on speed dial?
Yes, I do. I always worry when, I'm afraid he's going to retire, because I couldn't do my job without Richard. He's come to Washington County and looked at a lot of trees for me, and he really likes H&R Bakery. So it's very easy there, you know, to do that. But that specialization is going to be where I think extension needs to.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, yeah. Because you get questions from everything, from
right.
homeowners and their flowers to farmers and right. Large animals and horses. The amount of questions, I think that would be, it's like every day's Trivial Pursuit for an extension educator in a lot of ways.
And I love it, because no day is ever the yeah. same. And that's wonderful. And I've learned so much. And, you know, over 13 years, people will, you know, I know, okay, people are going to start talking about bagworms. You know, I'm going to start getting those questions. And so that's nice. After 13 years, I kind of have, you know, back of my head what I'm going to say, but
cold weather starts and the stink bugs start coming in right. The house or the little, you know.
Exactly. And thankfully, we have great office staff in Washington County. We have two wonderful ladies that work with us, and they've picked up on things too. You know, like if somebody comes in with a soil sample, they know how to take care of it. Somebody brings a spider in, they know it goes in the freezer for 24 hours before I look at it. All of those things. Yeah. So, you know, we do a lot of different things, and which is wonderful service for the community, but it does add time. And the way the world works is we want things instantly, right? And so Google is a competitor, I guess, for me. But when people come in, they're like, I read this on Google, yeah. blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh no, that's the worst thing you could do, right? And sometimes they want to fight with me about it. But, you know, that's where I see extension going.
And, yeah. When you get 2 million returns on a Google search and the first 1,000 are ads for something yes. else. It's got to sort through all that mess.
Yes. And that's what's great about the university system too, is that, you know, by going to different universities and getting an idea of, you know, this university is really good at this. This university is really good at that. Then I kind of get push those things out of the way that are distractions for other things. So
I'm still impressed that you know, were able to get a hold of Temple Grandin and have
her. Oh, yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She has a wonderful lady who works with her as well. Super responsive and cares very, very much about producers. It's just livestock producers. Just
that's amazing.
Yep. She's really, she believes in extension and its nice. Mission. And
where do you see youth education going, Taylor?
Yeah, so I agree with Danielle about, you know, the specialization, which makes me kind of nervous for youth development, because I feel like right now I'm, you know, the jack of all trades, but master of none, because we've had, you know, I want to help kids, you know, put together a Lego project or, you know, 3D print something for their farm toy scene. I've been trying to sew at least once a week so I can improve my sewing skills. So if someone comes to me and, you know, I was a sewing dropout. when we had to start adding buttons and zippers in the 4-H project, like I was out. I could not do that.
Sewing dropout.
Yes, I am a proud sewing dropout.
But come on, Taylor, nobody likes a quitter.
And that's probably another skill that we need to learn. I think sewing is important. My husband had a pair of jeans that need repaired, and I got them repaired, but I hope no one looks too closely because it's a little sketchy, but yeah,
you're not being judged anymore. Though.
No. Yeah. I'm not.
Would you be blue or red division, you know, or red group when you get to,
I feel like I would be a blue, but nothing above that. I feel like I hit the skills, but maybe not. I did what I needed. I did, but it's, you know, not
that,
champion.
That's
level.
One thing that's important, because, you know, my daughters, they all took sewing projects because my mother-in-law did it with them.
Right.
And, you know, and my wife's going to hear this, but she can't deny it. But, you know, they weren't making their own clothes, but they can, you know, they can put a button back on, they can fix some things. And so you get those basic life skills from those projects.
Right. And I'm thinking, like, so whenever I was in 4-H, I hope Marilyn Day hears this because she's wonderful. She took me in, she took me under her wing and helped me with my sewing projects. And I'm thinking, we need some more Maryland Days, and maybe I need to learn how to sew so I can teach some other grown-ups around me to we need those Maryland Days to be able to, yeah, to be able to help sew, because right now if I teach these, you know, if I'm teaching these kids how to sew all by myself, all they're going to do is know how to sew a pillow. You know, that's the only thing that we're going to be able to accomplish well. So
Potholders.
Yeah, I was learning potholders the other day so I could do them with one of the after school clubs. So it's like, I feel like I'm becoming, you know, the jack of all trades, but really just master of none. So if I have to specialize in something, I'm not sure what I'm going to be able to specialize in. And that's kind of sad because we have so many different opportunities and options for youth to do projects. I'm just not really sure what my specialty would be. So
throwing money at the sewing problem doesn't work, because I bought my wife a Go Get 'Em sewing machine. I mean, it'll do things. And I had this vision of having my pants hemmed and no.
I know. See, we've got to learn.
I know where a used sewing machine is if you're looking for one.
If there's a 4-H member who needs a sewing machine for their project.
Yes, we've got it. So it's just.
It sounds like you mentioned Maryland Day and some others you mentioned. It sounds like volunteers are a huge component of what you all are trying to do. And how do people get plugged in? How do they find you all to, I've got a skill and I want to help?
So they would go to the extension office because I like to meet people and, you know, see their face before they can sign up to be a volunteer. So the volunteer process is actually relatively, they're trying to streamline it to where it's all online. So they would just go, you know, to 4-H online and then start the process to become a new volunteer. We can actually take care of it right away in the office, or they have the ability to do it on their own. As long as you can pass a background check and work well with youth and other people. We're always looking for volunteers in many different areas. We have lots of livestock volunteers, our livestock superintendents, and those that work with our youth and livestock projects are excellent. I hope I never lose any of them because we rely heavily on them during ID days, during check-ins at the fair. Without our volunteers, we really couldn't get a lot accomplished during those things because there's only, you know, four of us that are working. And we just couldn't push all those cattle through. I'm not strong enough to, you know, lift those gates and stuff sometimes. So just being able to rely on those volunteers and all of that is really helpful for us.
Hey, there's nothing more rewarding than, you know, I think if you did a survey with your volunteers, that, you know, they get more out of it than they put into it. And it's fun, you know, especially fair week and just seeing all the kids come together and the water balloon fights and all the stuff that goes on, you know, at the fair and stuff. And you see those kids having fun and kind of the culmination of all their yearly efforts that they put into it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one more question. What's your favorite event or local program that goes on?
This is hard because there's so many great ones. I'll start. We just, there's a lot of great programs. I love the beef trip. I love bull breeding soundness exams. I love all of that. But we just started something new. It was in August?
Yeah.
So we were at a professional development event, and there was a program that was talking about utilizing barn quilts and, you know, doing a program where people create a barn quilt. And then while they're going through all that, they're meeting new people. We're talking about, you know, agriculture. We're talking about mental health. And there's a creative component, which in our office, Taylor is the creative component. I'm more of the, like, this is how we draw it on the board and the geometry part. And then she's like all the color mixing and, you know, what all the fun things are. But so we went to this training and we watched it and we, you know, thought we need this in Washington County. And then lo and behold, the Indiana Arts Commission was having a grant cycle for specific counties within the state, and Washington County was one of those. And so we applied and got money, about $5,000 to do a barn quilt, do barn quilt workshops in Washington County. And so we've
done a lot of fabric and stuff.
Well, it's their boards, like that you hang on your, that you paint and then you hang on there on your barn or on your house or things like that.
Oh, it's not a quilt?
It's called a barn quilt. So it's just a piece of wood and then you make a quilt block on it. So you paint it to look like what you would have made with fabric, right?
Oh.
Yeah. And so we talk about this, and we've had wonderful response. We had one in August, barn quilt workshop. It's 4 nights. Everybody comes together. We have educational things. And then at the end, they have their barn quilts and, you know, make that connection in the community. And so we were completely full for the first one. The second one, we were completely full. And then somebody had to, a family had, or two people had to drop out, so we weren't completely full. And we're going to schedule another one. And we already have a waiting list that is more than half full.
Yeah, it's overflowed from the first and second rounds.
Oh, so we haven't even had to market, you know, promote it We just call the people who are on the waiting list. And so people are calling our office all the time wanting to get on the waiting list for this. And that's not anything that's particularly one of our strengths. Well, I miss Sonia. She has that background in mental health, but it's an opportunity for us all to come together. And then we have people that go to ag programs that, you know, see this program, or I've been able to talk to them about it. And then there's families in 4-H, and then some of Sonia's people. And then while they're there, they meet the other educator and they're like, oh, I didn't know you did 4-H and that they could do this project in 4-H. And, oh, well, my son is raising sheep. They could come to your program. And so it just has, you know, increased our reach a whole lot.
So. Yeah, because that's one of the things. So whenever we do more, like, I think we talked about like the future of extension and all of that. I think a lot more collaborate, like cross collaboration. Yeah, cross collaboration. I was thinking cross curricular back from my teaching days, but just like being able to connect with Danielle's, it's a little bit easier for, you know, 4-H to connect with A&R because we have our livestock families that kind of share parents and youth. But also connecting with Sonia too, because one of the jokes is where, you know, extension is the best kept secret. So mm-hmm. I think we're going to have to not be so much of a secret, and we're going to have to be out there more. So just working with those programs and getting our people more connected will be really important for that. But yeah, the barn quilt class is so good. And we added it as a county 4-H project.
Right.
So we're going to be able to do that.
See, I think you need to, this is a fundraiser idea.
Okay.
So you need to take a barn quilt, sell it at your auction. Sal's going to buy it, hang it in his new shop. So
sounds perfect. Sold.
What should our minimum bid be?
Yeah. Oh, we'll come run him up. Don't worry about that. Okay. Okay.
We'll send you an invite.
Be careful what you say, because I can't say enough great things about our auction and the opportunities that our buyers provide for our youth.
So we're going to get in Sal's pocket.
Awesome. You got to dig way deep in there to compete at our auction. Our kids are very, very fortunate.
Yeah. There you go, Sal.
All started when I hit him up for some fundraiser thing.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, you're in now. The reciprocal fundraising.
There you go.
So that's a lot of ground we've covered. Jeff, we got anything else? I know we want to keep talking to these two.
Yeah, I think it's really cool what you guys are doing and working with the youth and stuff. I think your job is challenging because it's not just the traditional ag anymore. You got all the urbanization and stuff, and right. You probably got a lot of different questions coming at you. For kind of a fun thing to go out on, what's the weirdest question you guys have been asked? Or funniest story or something that.
Well, I guess I can share. I don't know how funny it was, but this gentleman called and he was talking about that he thought his cows had been poisoned. And so from their drinking water, he had a pond and all of this stuff. And so I was, you know, new, I was young and I was like, oh my goodness, you know, so I wanted to go out and do all this stuff. And, anyway, he said, well, I think my neighbor's doing something to it. And I said, well, why don't you just, you know, call him and ask him what's going on? Maybe he doesn't know that something he put on the ground or whatever. And he's like, oh no, I'm only allowed to talk to him through his lawyer.
Oh no.
And I was like, oh no, what did I just get in the middle of here? You know? So that's a funny one. And then also I always forget, when it was early, people were starting to fly on cover crop. That was, I was amazed at the number of people who called because they were scared. They thought that people were spreading something that was like dangerous.
Oh, really?
Yes. That was, it's when I first started because I knew it was cover crop, right?
Yeah.
And so when somebody called, I was just like, oh yeah, it's cover crop. No big deal. You know, well, I had to do some really hard convincing that it was just cover crop. And now, you know, over the years that's become more common. But in the beginning, people were very concerned and rightfully so when you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you see planes buzzing around.
Dropping stuff from the sky, you know. So that was, I guess, more funny on my end that I was just, you know, I just was normal.
I wouldn't have thought that they would have called the extension office.
Yes. Yeah.
I wouldn't either. Huh.
And well, I work with youth a lot. So the youth are just, you know, funny in general. And I think, okay, so one of like my biggest things is whenever I go into the schools, a lot of the times they get so excited because they think I'm a high schooler coming to, you know, yes. talk to their class. So I get a lot of, do you know my sister? Or are you from the high school? Because, you know, especially the elementary kids, they love the older kids. So it's like kind of funny because they think that. You know,
You're a 4-H'er. You're not the extension, you know, agent.
Yeah.
I told her to enjoy it. Enjoy it as long as you can.
I did that. I was up at it was in Johnson County, and it was a grazing workshop, and I was out there. I forget why, but had all the high school students, and I kept asking. So what grade are you in? I'm the extension educator. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And then I turned around as a little bit later and I was like, so what grade are, what are you going to do? I'm another extension educator. Yeah. And I was like, I'm just going to be quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a lot of ground. I'm glad we had these two in. It's been really interesting. Thanks for sharing. And we're not going to keep it a secret. Because we're going to put the extension service on the podcast.
Right. Thank you. I just feel like we could sit here and talk all day about, we just have a whole series with you about Purdue Extension.
We could do it.
We'll have you back.
Yeah. We'd love to.
That's another episode of The High Ground powered by Premier Ag. Thank you very much.